Hello and good evening. Welcome to the Navigating the New Economy call with I'm Tara Gentile, and we've got Amanda Steinberg on the line as well. Say hey, Amanda.
Hello.
Hello. So just a couple of quick housekeeping notes before we jump right on into this call. First, this call is being recorded. So if you have to go early or, you know, you just love the call and you want to listen back to it, we will be sending out the recording in email form tomorrow, so you can look for that. I also wanted to let everyone know that everyone on the line, except for Amanda and I, are muted. So if you've got barking dogs in the background, screaming children, screaming husbands, girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever, don't worry about it. Just sit back, relax, enjoy the call. We're going to be on the line here for about an hour or so. Also wanted to let you know that there is a kind of parallel conversation going on Twitter. So if you tweet, go ahead and open up Twitter and search for YouEconomy, YouEconomy. That's your hashtag. Feel free to tweet out anything from the call that you like, anything that's kind of hitting home for you, any questions that you have. Chat back and forth with call participants. This is a great opportunity to meet people who are like-minded, share values, share priorities, and are just trying to get ahead in this crazy new economy, YouEconomy world. I know the other thing I wanted to say about Twitter. If you want to tweet either Amanda or I, it's at Tara Gentile for me, Gentile, and at Amanda Steinberg for Amanda. I think that was all my housekeeping notes. Let me just double check. The only other thing I wanted to say is for those of you who submitted questions and submitted the topics that you wanted us to concentrate on for today's call, thank you so much. So many great questions came in this weekend. We won't be able to possibly answer all of them. We got so many, but we're going to do our best to give you both a kind of philosophical overview of this new economy and also actionable items that you can take back into your life and work to feel like you've got a handle on this rapidly changing world. So, and then if you want more information on the new economy, or as I like to call it, the YouEconomy, make sure you follow Daily Worth. Go to dailyworth.com, and then also follow along my blog at taragentile.com. As we're going to give you lots more information over the coming days, weeks, months on these topics. We kind of love talking about this stuff. So
we do. That's how this all came about over the kitchen table a few weeks ago.
Exactly. So, Amanda, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and we'll kick this puppy off.
Sure. So first of all, a huge hello to everyone here who's subscribed to Daily Worth. You probably feel like you already know me because of all the things that I write about. So nice to meet you and thank you for coming. And for those of you who have no clue who I am, my name is Amanda Steinberg, and I started dailyworth.com 4 years ago to empower women around money. I get happier and happier when you have more and more money. I specifically started dailyworth.com because in my 20s, as a computer engineer, I became amazing at making money, which is something I can talk endlessly about because it's something I'm really good at. Unfortunately, I also, in my 20s, got really good at spending all that money that I made, which is what inspired me to start Daily Worth, to say, something's missing here in terms of my ability to do basic math around saving and habit development around saving. And fortunately, over the last 4 years, I've hired some extraordinary journalists in the area of money and learned from them and be able to apply everything that it is that we preach now around earning what you're worth and saving money. And I'm here to bring you tonight both kind of personal lessons from how I've made it into the many hundreds of thousands of dollars earning category by both being a freelancer and being CEO of a media company, and also just kind of giving my thoughts on the economy and the future of the economy and how you can thrive in that, both in terms of the mindset that you have as well as the specific tactical things that you can do so that you make a lot of money and save a lot of money, because that's what I'm here for.
Awesome. Yay, money. My people know I love me some money. And okay, so for those of you who don't know me, my name's Tara Gentile. I'm a writer, a speaker, and a business coach, and I'm leading what I call the you economy. I love this topic of thinking about and talking about and really engaging how our economic system is changing. And my kind of thesis for all of this is that while in the past, other people have held the reins of commerce, other people have been in control of how we earn our livings and how we run our lives, with technology and media the way it is today, you are in control of the economy. I like to say, well, two things. You are the new economy. And two, you are the engine of economic growth we've been waiting for. And just like Amanda said, that requires us to earn serious dough in the 21st century. Now, there's all sorts of ways you can look at that and, you know, that's a whole, probably a whole nother conversation for another day. But let me tell you what it's meant to me, and specifically what Daily Worth and Amanda, meeting Amanda and becoming, growing a relationship with Amanda has meant to me. I started off with a minimum wage mindset in this whole solo entrepreneurial venture. I used to make $28,000 a year working as a manager for a major bookstore chain. It is now officially a dead-end job because I used to work for Borders. And I thought, well, if Borders is willing to pay me $28,000 a year, that must be what I'm worth. And so when I ventured into business, that was my goal. I want to earn about, $28,000, $30,000 a year. That would be amazing. And meeting Amanda and learning that money is not the enemy, that I am worth more than what other people have been willing to pay me in the past, that I can package myself and my skills and my talents in such a way that makes me valuable to the people that I serve. I was able to grow my business from a few thousand dollars the first year to a $60,000 business the second year, to $120,000 business the third year. This year, I'm well on track to bring in $200,000 this year. And Amanda knows I credit most of that to her and the Daily Worth. And I could not be more excited to be on this call and talking about this topic with her today. So that's a little bit about me and what Daily Worth and Amanda has meant to me in my life.
Well, thank you, Tara. And I just want to go through a little bit very quickly about what you mean to me so that we can then get into really the heart of stuff to really be helpful to everyone. But I just want to say that, you've been the poster child of this business since I started it 3.5 years ago. And, we all kind of toil away at our computers and wonder if what we're doing is meaningful. And when I went out and raised venture capital, I've raised about $3 million in venture capital to grow Daily Worth. You were actually on the cover of my investor deck that I said, see, this is the results that we can produce, and this is the meaning that we can create. So now that we've declared this as a total love fest and everyone understands why we're collaborating, and we both live in Pennsylvania, woo-woo, Pennsylvania, we can actually get into the heart of why it is we're here tonight.
Yes. So we've broken the topics down that we want to cover tonight into three categories. First, personal identity, what it means to be living and working in the new economy, employment, and then finally our businesses, because we know there's lots of business owners and entrepreneurs on the call, and we want to make sure to give you lots of juicy information about how you could be steering your business for success in the 21st century. As this economic system is changing, how can you position yourself to really grow and thrive amidst change? So the first question we wanted to start off with is how do we understand who we are or who we were in terms of the old economy? Where are we starting from? Amanda, you want to kick that part off?
Sure. Well, I think it really all kind of goes back to our childhoods and all of the messages that we received throughout our lives in terms of who we were supposed to become when we grew up and the type of societal constructs we were supposed to fit into in terms of marriage and children and buying a house and saving for retirement and that's kind of the context that a lot of us, not everyone, some of us had unconventional upbringings, but in terms of the mass media messages, there was a pretty specific formula that we thought we were supposed to follow. Anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think for me, the old economy is really about either or. And even though I had a fairly unconventional model for growing up, my mom supported herself as a self-employed seamstress for, you know, all of really my younger years. I was kind of told, well, you can either do what you love and follow your passion, follow what thrills you, or you can make a lot of money and pay the bills. And so I always thought of this as a choice, that there was opportunity for me to be personally fulfilled, or there was an opportunity to fulfill personal obligations. And for most people, I think we have chosen this role of fulfilling personal obligations, because when it comes down to it, most of us are, you know, good law-abiding, responsibility-wielding people, and we want to do what's right. But at the same time, we felt this great sacrifice around personal fulfillment. And what's most exciting to me about the new economy is that we are not only being allowed but encouraged to say, no, I want both. I want both to be able to fill my personal responsibilities and to be able to fulfill myself and my purpose on a day-by-day basis.
Exactly. And actually, I got lucky. I never got those. When I was 21, I was introduced to a conference I'm going to recommend to everyone right now. I didn't even think I was going to talk about this, but of course I am, because it's totally made me who I am, called the Social Venture Network. And you can go to svn.org. And it was started by Ben Cohen of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream and Anita Roddick of The Body Shop. And it was all about the idea of achieving social visions through capitalism. And I was like, hello, I can't imagine doing – I've only had one job in my 14-year career where I was working for profit alone, not along some social mission, and I failed. I think I got fired after like 6 months because I could not close a single deal because I didn't care. So it's an interesting – I don't know if that was just because I got lucky and I got indoctrinated with this message early on, or if it's just the way things are shifting for some people.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's the way things are shifting for some people, and I feel like it is. But I also feel like you got lucky.
I did.
Yeah. So I think moving on from there, we really need to look at who are we then in the new economy? How do we fulfill, or what is the role that we're fulfilling in the new economy for ourselves, for our families, for our communities? And I think that really has a lot to do with this this idea of personal fulfillment and also purpose. I think we're a lot more driven by a sense of purpose today than we were 10 years ago or 20 years ago even. And that makes a big difference on how we look at, you know, what we're going to choose for our college educations or continuing education, what we're going to say yes to or say no to as far as job opportunities go, where we're going to live, how we're going to raise our families. So if you can hone in on your purpose, I think there's a much clearer understanding of how you can make decisions in your work and financial life.
You know, actually, Tara, hold on for a second.
Yeah.
I want to put the purpose thing on the sidelines for a second.
Sure.
And I want to make a really important statement first about the new economy. Because I want everyone here who's listening tonight, and I'm watching the Twitter stream roll as we talk. So if I sound a little scatterbrained, it's because I'm trying to read multiple messages at once. But I just want to make clear that this new economy is actually the women's economy. I want to make sure everyone understands this. There's some crazy stuff going on right now. Women, Time Magazine published this about 2 months ago. It's a cover article, if any of you missed it. Women are soon going to outpace men as breadwinners. Married women are soon going to outpace their husbands as breadwinners. Women are going to inherit $25 trillion over the next 20 years, which is going to equate to 2/3 of the wealth in the United States. For those of you who are in the U.S., I'm not sure if we have any international listeners this evening. And I hear you on the purpose thing, but first I just want to acknowledge this change that's happening that our world has never seen before, which is that women are going to control more money. It's kind of insane to think about. And what I, and this is where I get goosebumps thinking about it, is this is, if I want to stand on a soapbox and ask any big question, it's, ladies, what are we going to do with this newfound financial responsibility? Because we have so much more influence than we ever have before. And that means we get to reinvent structures that don't work for us and decide how we want them to be. And that to me is at the foundation of this new economy. Even before purpose, it's just going, we're going to have more money. We're going to have more money. Funny, huh? So let's take it from there. What do you think about that, Tara?
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I've seen it happen in my personal life. I see it happen all around me. I mean, my audience online is predominantly female. I think not because I market specifically to women, as some people do, but because women are the movers and shakers in this new economy. But I also think that this actually really relates very well to the question of purpose. And it also relates very well to the question of what are the unique strengths and talents that are key to success in the new economy. And women tend, on average, trendy wise, to have more of these skills and traits. You know, so if we're talking about creativity, if we're talking about empathy, if we're talking about the ability to see things outside the way they've always been, if we're talking about, creating personal connections and nurturing relationships, to me, those are skills that are sorely needed in our economy today and in commerce today. And they're skills that women are generally uniquely positioned to fill and to serve with. And that's why, to me, women are taking such powerful roles in the new economy. We are ready. We have the skills. The things that you are naturally good at are the things that you need to be good at to thrive in today's economy. Do you agree?
I kind of agree with you. I kind of disagree with you. I mean, I agree with you to the extent that I agree that, you know, the empathy and emotional connection and valuing that type of interrelatedness is something that many women have in common. But I also note that that for forever, working women, well, working women just entered the workforce about 50 years ago, have been kind of trained, as we all, as men have as well, to attach ourselves to larger structures that are predictable to a certain extent, where we've been trained to do a single task repeatedly. So while women do have some of the skills that are very valuable and definitely sorely needed and missing in terms of business interaction today, we're also here tonight to talk about those things that we weren't necessarily cultivated that are absolutely critical to thriving in this new economy. So I'm agreeing with you, and I'm also saying we got to take this conversation a lot further.
Yeah, I love that. And you know what? I think that leads us beautifully into the stability question. We got a bunch of questions in on our survey about people wanting to know, well, what can I do to create a more stable environment for myself in this new economy? And you wrote me a little note in our kind of outline that we did for the call that we need to kind of forget about stability. And I couldn't agree more with that. I think the very definition of what it means to have a stable job has changed fundamentally across the board, that no one has a stable job anymore, that no one, that, you know, these constructs that you said that we have been trained to fulfill, they don't exist anymore. So what's going on there? What if we can no longer seek stability in our lives, what are we seeking to replace that?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. I was raised by a single mom. I'm now a single mom myself. I've always taken on these massive, overwhelming challenges, and stability has never been a goal for me. My poor children, who are 5 and 3, who probably would like some more stability in their lives. I mean, I'm not really sure. I'll have to ask them that question. It's interesting is why are we seeking stability, and what is the is there, I think there's kind of an illusion that we're looking for, that we're suddenly going to sing Kumbaya and feel inner peace and like float off into the sunset. I mean, did that ever really exist? I'm not really sure. Regardless, I don't think the key to the new economy is seeking out stability. I definitely think it's about understanding how to optimize and, let's just say, even opportunistically exploit change to your own advantage. Wow, that was a mouthful. Can we repeat that one? How do you exploit and opportunistically capitalize on change? So one thing I actually never fear for myself is income. I've mastered the income game, and I did that by becoming a computer engineer. And I'm completely self-taught. My degree from college is in urban planning and architecture. Everything I understand about being a web programmer that's earned me many hundreds of thousands of dollars of years is completely taught by doing and failing, doing and failing, doing and succeeding, going, oh my God, that worked. Let me go do that again. And then, oh, it failed this time. So just for those of you who are going, who do want stability, I'd say definitely go learn HTML and cascading style sheets and how to publish websites. And there will be a lot of business opportunity there for you. But I think the mindset, actually, we're publishing, Daily Worth has an entrepreneur edition. When you sign up for Daily Worth, you can check the checkbox that says create worth. And tomorrow we're publishing a piece about this new job title called growth hacker. Have you heard this term yet, Tara?
I think so, but I actually have no idea what it means.
So the whole idea of a growth hacker is actually what modern marketers have to become in this economy, which is actually, we used to have this idea. Well, I was actually never a marketer. I've always been an engineer and a salesperson. I've never identified myself as a marketer, so I've had to really learn it in the last couple of years. And there used to be this way of packaging and branding and positioning oneself and then coming up with ideas for products. And then they would work or not. I don't know. I'm sure there are many professional marketers on the call listening right now going, no, that's not exactly it. But anyways, regardless, there's a new way of operating inside of marketing. And I think this can be applied to business and our lives as a whole, which is all about understanding what your intentions are, seeing the results and responding, and always just trying to optimize inside of decision sets. It's if you hang around programmers and web people long enough, you just hear them talk about something called split testing. And I really want to play with what this looks like when applied to your entire life, because with this new economy and with the way media is changing and publishing is changing and banking is changing, you know, I was hanging out with a billionaire last weekend because that's what I do. And I asked this billionaire where's the economy going? When is it going to come back? What's going to cause it to come back? I was like, please tell me everything so I know what I'm talking about on this new economy call. And, you know, and he said, he even said he has no idea. And he's the ultimate gambler on the marketplace. So I think it's learning the methodology about how to make small actions and learn from those and respond and never expecting something to have the same result that it did the first time. Did I just totally confuse you, Tara? Is that making any sense?
No, I absolutely love it. And I just want to underline what you said, that last line that you said, doing things over again and never expecting them to have the same results. I mean, right. I'm a glutton for change. I love change. And I have a feeling that that's probably why one of the reasons I've been so successful over the last 3.5-4 years. I see change as exciting, like you said, as an opportunity. There's always something to be gained in a change. You never have to think of it as loss. But that's a big mindset change for a lot of people. And, if you have been supporting yourself in a kind of what we're calling old economy job for the last 5, 10, 20 years, this rapid change can look like you're losing a lot when really there's a lot to be gained here. What you were saying about split testing, of course, really reminded me of the whole Silicon Valley idea of minimum viable products. If you're looking
exactly.
at the lean startup method, I think each and every one of us has an opportunity to be a minimum viable product. Like, what's a minimum viable resume in the new economy? What's a minimum viable job description in the new economy?
What's a minimum viable house when you just lost your house? You know what I mean? Actually, I used to have a 4,000 square foot granite countertop house with my ex-husband, and now I'm in a two-bedroom with peeling formica, and that's fine. It's part of my new split test, and I'm going to trade up to my twin with the four bedrooms, maybe. Here in Philly, it's pretty affordable right now, but I'm not sure. It's like, I'm going to rent there, and I'm going to test my way up to figure out what works for me, and I'm not going to make these huge, massive bets anymore.
Right, and you're not going to follow anyone else's, you know, conventional life path either. There's just
That's
no reason to follow the instructions anymore because the instructions don't apply. You have to test this stuff for yourself. So whether you're looking for a job or you're looking for the next project or you're looking to grow a business, you have to try things. You absolutely have to test things, just like you said with split testing. There's no way around it. There is no amount of information that Amanda or I can give you on this call that's going to make you feel, oh, I'm at peace with the new economy. We can get you excited about it. We can give you a framework for thinking about it. But in the end, you have to go out and try it because what has worked for me may not work for you. What's worked for Amanda, you know, may not work for you. And
so,
I think,
Tara,
you know,
let me ask you a question. So last Friday, I sent out an email to all of Daily Worth's 300,000 subscribers with a Google Voice number. I said, for the next 4 hours, anyone can call me. It was unbelievable. I got calls from all over the country. And there was a woman named Ruth in Connecticut who was in her late 40s. In her mid 30s, she had given birth to a special needs child and had been out of the workforce for about 15 years. And she was calling me because actually she had always envisioned herself as a stay-at-home mom, but the reality was is they weren't making ends meet. And she was trying to figure out how to get back into the workforce. And she didn't even know Excel. What do you think are kind of the minimum requirements to even work and earn as a freelancer these days? Can we just rattle a few of these off?
Oh, sure. I would love to do this. Well, you mentioned learning HTML and CSS earlier. I actually think that if you want to get a freelance job, you have to know some amount of HTML and or CSS. Well, and I should say CSS. You can't, it's hard to have one without the other.
You can't do HTML without CSS. CSS is what makes the web page have colors and have fonts.
Yeah.
HTML is what determines where things fall on the page. I just want you to know that I taught myself out of a book in about 2 weeks, and you can too. Definitely not be afraid of it. You're going to, once you actually get over the hurdle of going, all right, I'm going to build myself a web page, you're going to go, why was I afraid of this? This is really easy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and just like you said, web design, you know, you got to know WordPress. Everyone from CNN down to itty bitty blogger who's looking for a VA is running their site on WordPress. If you don't know WordPress, you're done. If you don't know how to operate Facebook and Twitter, you're done. You know, because again, businesses all the way from Fortune 50 companies down to itty bitty person looking for someone who just to help with social media is going to be looking for people who can maximize their presence on those two platforms.
What about spreadsheets? Do you think spreadsheets are critical? I think they're critical.
Yeah, I know you're a big spreadsheet lover. I am not a huge spreadsheet lover, but I like looking at them. I mean, I can certainly get around a spreadsheet, and I can create them as well. You know, I think even just having the comfort with a computer terminal to the point where you can pull up a dummy's book and teach yourself something in an hour or two is an important skill. And feeling the confidence that you can do that as well, because I think, you know, anyone who's listening on this call can do that. It's just a matter of saying, yes, this is something I'm willing to do. I'm willing to take on a task that I don't know how to get from point A to point B to point C, but I know that there's a book or a resource out there that can show me how, and I know I have enough confidence and I have the fundamental skills that it takes to be able to follow those instructions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything else you think, like if we're talking to Ruth, who's in Connecticut, who hasn't worked in 15 years, actually, the most interesting thing was she was all I could hear for 45 minutes was her resentment that she needed to work, which I empathized deeply with. It was definitely not the life vision she had had for herself. But, you know, she wasn't making it. She wasn't making ends meet with her husband. So she realized she had to go back to work. So most of the call was spent helping her come to grips with the fact that she had to become a worker again. And then figuring out where she even began. Is there anything else you think she needed to, what about her? This is an interesting one. This is something we've written about on Daily Worth. Pay attention to your email address. Don't have it be like kittyboo7@AOL.com. No one's going to call you back.
No, no, no. Because any more on your resume, people are going to want to see your email address. They don't care about your phone number. They want to see your email address. That's as big a headline as anything else. So make it TaraGentile@gmail.com. Even better, make it like mine is hello@TaraGentile.com. Buy your own domain name. Everyone on the call, go buy your own domain name. You know, we had talked while we were prepping for the call, or while we were agreeing that we were going to do this call, about packaging skills. So, and I think that's a really important note that we need to hit here too, is that it's not always about the particular skills that you have, but about how you can make yourself and the skills and talents that you have really benefit your employer, look like that, you know, be able to communicate how they're going to benefit an employer or someone that you're contracting with. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. There's so many ways I could approach this topic. Which specific aspect of it do you want me to talk about? Packaging your skill set or packaging yourself?
Packaging yourself.
This is funny because I've just been booked on my first national talk show in the fall. I'm not going to tell you guys which one yet, but I will. And I'm actually a hippie, and I have, like, you know, bad hair, long hair, frizzy hair, and my nails are never well done. And actually, I've been kind of schooled lately by mentors of mine who are saying, Amanda, it's not about giving up your identity, but it is about creating yourself as an aspirational personality, because you have a message you really want to bring. And if you bring this kind of scraggly hippie self into the public sphere, which is how I look most of the time, it actually creates noise interference between the message you ultimately want to bring and the service you want to provide. So when I feel like I have to turn myself into kind of a glossy makeup, you know, high-heeled, suit-wearing power diva, I actually have had to reframe my own mindset to say, you know what, for me to accomplish my goals and for me to be a meaningful personality in the public sphere, I have to surrender to that. So I'm going to stop dyeing my hair at home. I'm actually going to the salon on Thursday to have it professionally done. I'm paying attention to my nails. And as much as I hate this, I'm actually working with a coach right now to get over my own attachment to looking like a ragamuffin. And it's a process, I have to say.
Yeah. I went through a very similar process this year as well, because, you know, while I may not be booked for any national talk shows, although if you're listening, I would be glad to talk to you. Because my brand, my business is me, I need to make sure that I'm representing the professional image that I want to represent. Now, I have the privilege I've made the choice to be able to represent myself pretty much however I want to represent myself, but it's got to look polished. It's got to look professional. And so if I want to be the funky professor, pseudo professor person on my website, in my images, in the way that I communicate to people in interviews or whatever, I can do that, but I have to make sure it's polished, just like you said. And so, you know, I totally agree with that. I think there's way too many people who think that this DIY economy, that this new economy means that they can get away with being, you know, slubby at home in yoga pants, working, you know, doing the work in front of the computer at the kitchen table. And while yoga pants and kitchen table work may do sometimes, you have got to understand how you can step it up, and you've got to be able to step into that role as a polished professional at any given time. This is not about just, being the okay
being totally
version of
authentic
yourself
to how you feel when you get out of bed in the morning. It's not, yeah, it's not about that. It's not about, like, no, I wake up and I feel like feeling like I'm feeling. Not exactly.
Yeah, no, this is about being your most fantastic self. Like, you're exactly right. I don't want to be me when I wake up in the morning. I want to be me when I've combed my hair and put on my makeup and put on my favorite outfit. Like, that's what, how I want to build my business and my professional self to be every single day. I think that's really important.
So let's talk about, now you've got your personal image, you know, there is a part of me that wants to be a diva. So I am living into that. and then let's talk about the absolutely critical central, element of networking face to face. And I'm not talking about Twitter and I'm not talking about Facebook. I'm talking about getting your tush to conferences and meeting as many powerful, connected people as possible and learning how to properly develop loose relationships with them, not BFFs, I'm taking you out to dinner relationships, but loose connections with as many powerful people as possible. If I ever write a book, I'm sure I'm going to write lots of books. It's about that all of my personal success stems from the fact that I go out when I actually do brush my hair and I shake hands and I meet as many people as possible. And then those become the projects and opportunities that I cultivate.
Yes. Yes. I used to think that when I was growing an online business, so that meant I could do everything online. There is no such thing. There is only integration between online and offline. And so no matter how much networking you might do on Twitter, no matter how much quote unquote networking you might be doing on Facebook, it doesn't count for anything if you're not putting flesh to flesh, palm to palm, if you're not talking to people face to face. The relationships that I have created over the last year and a half of getting my ass out the door on a weekly or monthly basis have meant, they've catapulted me from one level straight through, you know, on up a couple really. And now people associate me with the people I associate with. And I think that's a major lesson of networking as well. I mean, heck, how cool is it that I'm doing a conference call right now with the CEO of a $1 million+ corporation? That's freaking awesome. And it's only because Amanda and I know each other in person.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, that's you.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, that's key. It's so key. And I totally agree with you. You cannot emphasize that enough.
Totally. So what about for everyone who's listening tonight who's going, well, that's fine, but what am I supposed to do? I don't really know what my skill is, or where do I begin? Or I'm doing something and it's not working. Where do we start there?
Great question. I think you have to look for needs. I mean, there's this idea that you can just have a passion for something and that that's enough. And I believe we have to stop trying to make money from our passions. Passion isn't something that you can extract dollars and cents from.
I'm so relieved to hear you say that. Thank you. Yes.
I know.
Become a little cliche in our like business speak world, but I think people are being a little misled by like suddenly you source your passion. And a lot of people are like, I don't know what my passion is. And then whoop, like your bank account becomes filled. No, sorry. I wish it was that easy.
No, I actually think that we misdefine passion all the time. Passion is not one thing that you settle on. It's not one interest that you have. I mean, I think that's the key. Passion is not an interest that you have. Passion is how you work. It's the actual working that you do. If you can put your enthusiasm and your productive potential into the work that you have chosen to do, then that's how you make money with passion. That's a big, big difference between trying to make money from your passion. So you have to look for needs. You have to look for what people are asking for. And like Amanda said, web design, knowing HTML and CSS, knowing WordPress, little things like that. If you can pull together skills like that, those are needs that people are expressing on a day-to-day basis. They're saying, oh, I wish I had a website that worked. I wish I didn't just have my Facebook page. I wish that the restaurant down the street didn't have a website that crashes or that doesn't load on my iPhone because it's still on Flash from, you know, 2002. That's a need. There are all sorts of other needs. Excellent writing, social media marketing, Design.
What about that excellent writing thing, though? I mean, is anyone really making money from writing right now? I'm a little worried about writing unto itself.
You mean like writing as in
for the
writing
long term, not right now, just in general, like writers?
I mean, I know lots of copywriters that are making good money.
Right. Yes,
so
me too.
Yeah. People who are making money or who are writing for the purpose of, you know, increasing sales in someone's business. People who are writing for the purpose of telling a story for someone's nonprofit or for someone.
You know, it's funny. The writers I know who understand split testing are doing very well. The ones who know how to test their copy. It's an interesting evolution of the copywriting realm.
Writers have to
But what about like Huffington Post and Forbes? I mean, they're mostly run on free writing now.
Yeah, people aren't making money writing there. And I don't think people are really building their platforms there either. I think it's a nice resume credit, maybe. It's a nice logo to stash on your website. But I think the real money to be made is from person, you know, if you're looking at writing, it's from business to business. It's from you to a business that needs the help. And so that takes, you know, if I don't want to necessarily say it takes cold calling, but it does take reaching your hand out or, you know, reaching across the table and saying, hey, this is a skill I have. This is how it would benefit you as a business. Would you be willing to try me out on a project? I'll work for free for one project.
That's what I told Ruth in Connecticut, and she did not want to hear it. I said, Ruth, if I was in your shoes, I would do a 3-month project for free. You need to do something on your, you need to put something on your resume. And she was horrified. And I was like, oh God, I haven't helped this woman. But I firmly believe that. That's how I got every dream job I've ever gone after in my life, was I actually did stuff for free for people. And then that was how they saw I was indispensable. Fascinating idea there.
Yeah, working for free is awesome. Working for cheap? No, don't work for cheap. Work for free. Right. It's either free or you pay full price. There is no in between there. But working for free gets you testimonials. Working for free gets you points on your resume. Working for free gets you experience. I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I think there is a real problem with internship culture, especially in the United States right now. I'd love to get your take on that.
I'm an employer. I have 10 employees and one amazing intern. I mean, do you think in terms of intern exploitation?
Yes.
This is a tough one coming at this from the employer side where, you know, there are brilliant young people lining up to work for free. This is where capitalism at play is, you know, do we pay stipends? Yes. Do we pay travel fees? Yes. But as a, you know, I have to play half capitalist, half social missionary. And the part of my, you know, I don't think I can give you anything that's going to make you feel good in this circumstance.
That's okay.
Right now.
I don't expect you to make me feel good. I just think that, you know, like you said, there's a lot of people that are willing to work for free or very little, and there's a lot of people willing to take advantage of it. And I think that as a whole, working for free, as I just said, and internships, as you just said, are not a bad thing. They're great. But I think we all need to have the self-respect and the self-worth to say when enough is enough. And you don't
That's really what it is. Like, be sure. This is, and even say this to the person who's employing you, like, I'm going to be your intern for 6 months. And if I accomplish X, Y, and Z, I would like to know that there's a job at the end of the tunnel for this. And you may get a yes, you may get a no, but at least there's a clear expectation that you're not going to be doing this forever.
Yeah. Interning should be a stepping stone, not a way of life.
Definitely. It's tough though. I mean, I was born into a different economy and I've been hustling since I was 13, you know, on the money making side. But actually, but what am I saying? I also worked for free all through college. This is a whole nother call, Tara. Let's move on to something else.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so I just want to talk about the problem I'm solving in starting Daily Worth, which is women's relationship to money. You know, I started Daily Worth for a lot of different reasons, but there were all these signals that kept popping up into my life in 2008. And one of them was noticing that many of my amazingly talented women entrepreneur friends were doing work and then not sending invoices for that work. And then they would send invoices, but they wouldn't actually collect on the money for that. So let's talk a little bit about our relationship for money, and let's indoctrinate our listeners in loving money and wanting to, you know, extract as much of it as possible.
Yeah. Well, you used the EX word. I don't like the extract word. I think what all of us are doing is actually generating wealth. Extracting wealth or extracting financial capital is all about playing the system to get money that's been shuffled around from someplace else. And the way I came to love money was realizing that the work that I did actually was creating value for other people. That when I did work for someone else, I wasn't taking their money. They had actually received something that they valued much more in return. You know, and we do this always on a daily basis. So when I start getting people thinking about money, I ask them to think about, well, their grocery bill for one, because I bet most of you on the call today like to buy organic produce. This is the example I always use. So forgive me if you've already heard it. But my people, I know, tend to have a preference for organic produce. So I know they're willing to spend 60% more to get that organic produce. Well, there's a time when you value the organic produce much more than you value the money that you have to spend for it. Other people choose to make a different choice. So think of the work that you do in the same way. What you do for your customers, they value more than the money that they're parting with. So you're not taking anything from them. You're not even extracting that money. You have generated value for them, and they are reciprocating with value in the form of money for you. Figuring that out was huge for me. And Amanda, you were definitely a catalyst in figuring that out. But
that's
really
so nice. But I have to disagree with you a little bit.
Sure.
Because I think that, you know, being in the mindset that you are awesome and therefore can generate money, you know, times are tough right now, and, you know, accounts payable departments and companies, depending on the level of company that you're working with, you know, it's not their fault. They get instructions from above to, you know, hold invoices for 2 months, 3 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, not always. I know this does happen sometimes. Some clients are awesome at paying money. But I think that if you live in this realm where you think that your awesomeness alone is going to generate funds, you don't realize that there's like 10, 15 steps you sometimes have to take in order to get the money that was agreed to be paid for to you. And this is where a lot of first-time freelancers and first-time business owners really struggle with cash flow. It's like they had a $6,000 month, but only $2,000 came in because, oops, their invoice got lost or something. So, you know, the extraction part is like you kind of, if it's been guaranteed to you, you have to, not in a malicious or dishonest way, but you do have to take it to a certain extent. There is a level of aggression there that I think is uncomfortable for women to talk about sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's really helped me with that, though, is process. You have to have a process in place for invoicing. You have to have like rules that you're going to say this bill is due within 30 days. And if it's not due within 30 days and that has been properly communicated to the person that's supposed to be paying you, then it's much more difficult to come up with those negative feelings around reminding or sending the email or, heaven forbid, picking up the phone and saying, hey, where's my check? So I don't think we disagree there at all there. It's just a matter of, you know,
it's a mindset of seeing where the money comes from.
Exactly.
You're not exploiting anyone. You truly are bringing value. I mean, that's how I know that the work in Daily Worth, our work is making women richer, which, you know, is definitely worthy of us being compensated for, whether it's through advertisers or ultimately our own products. It's an interesting philosophy around how you think about where your worth comes from, not only where your worth comes from, but how you have that worth show up in your bank account. That's where women are going to succeed in the new economy, is when they ultimately figure out how they're connecting their skills and their passions to actually being liquid. It's hard when you don't have a paycheck coming in every month.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I had something that I wanted to say about that and I lost my thought, which is pretty good because we're 50 minutes into the call and that's the first time that's happened.
Totally. So where shall we take it from here? Yeah.
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes left. Well, Amanda, I want to ask you the first question that we had under our businesses. How has startup culture really changed in the last 5 years? What has the very present history of starting a business looked like, and kind of where is it going, or how is it continuing to change into maybe the next 5 years?
Startup culture. You know, I've been a part of startup culture for about 14 years now. I've started about 6 businesses. I guess startup culture has changed in that there's so many more resources. Like there's so many mentors and advisors out there who have been successful entrepreneurs who can explain how to navigate the digital economy, especially. That'll be our next call, Tara, the digital economy.
Oh, please.
And so that's one thing. It's like I was hand coding my first e-commerce site in 1999. Out of one of those, like, I forget what the books were even called. They had little animals on the covers, out of a book. And there weren't really forums to talk to other programmers. It's kind of like you were on your own. What's brilliant about startup culture today is that, like, there's just everyone's kind of trying to start something or has something on the side. So that's good. So you have a lot of community. The other thing is that, you know, we no longer value these massive business plans with these take over the world initiatives. It's like, what's going to generate me $4,000 a month? What's going to generate me $6,000 a month? Oh, wow, I figured this out. Now I'm going to make me $10,000 a month. It's kind of like, you know, it's that minimum viable product. It's let's not spend 6 months planning and plotting. Let's figure out how to throw something out there that works within 6 weeks and then learn from it and then fold quickly if it's not working. Don't hang around with a business for 2 years if it's not working. You should be able to figure it out by then. Start something new. You know, respond really quickly. Failure is constant. You know, like I have certain folks in my life who like to point out the things that I'm doing wrong, and it never actually bothers me because I'm like, guess what? 80% of the things I do are going to be wrong, but 20% of the things I'm going to do are going to be right, and those are the things that are really going to work, and I have no idea what those are. All I know is that most of the things I'm going to try are going to fail.
Amen. Yes.
Failure is not a negative thing anymore. It's like failure is constant. Failure is expected. Failure is like, woohoo, look what I learned.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I actually have to have a revenue model. Oh, there actually needs to be a market that can afford what it is I'm selling. I didn't realize that when I developed my product. I hear all the time folks who want to coach, unemployed people and help them find jobs. I'm like, well, you got to find a market that can actually afford to pay you money. So unemployed people might not be a great market for you. But, you know, it takes you actually doing that and experiencing that to go, the next business I start, I'm going to pick a market that actually has money that can afford to pay me something.
Yep. Yep. And, I mean, that kind of comes full circle with what we started off talking about in the call around stability and having clear career paths or, you know, instructions for how to succeed in life. There are no clear instructions for how to succeed in business anymore. And you know, what worked for you may not work for me, may not work for someone else on the call. So everything, as you had said before, needs to be tested. I'm wondering if you have any guidelines for people to figure, maybe it sounds simple, but how do we know when a test, you know,
how do you know when a test works?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, like it's clear when it's a test. Is basically you do, so let me think of an example. You are selling jewelry online, and you are selling earrings that are perfect for Mother's Day since that just passed. And you have an email list of 500 people. You split that list into 250 to 250. MailChimp makes this super duper easy. And then you write two different types of copy. In one copy, you say, you know, 20% off. In other copy, you talk about, you know, your passion behind the piece and what it meant to you and why it's dedicated to your mom. And at the end of the day, one is going to sell more than the other. It becomes like a horse race. It's who wins at the gate. You know, you just want to set up two control groups and you figure out which one went. Now, if you don't sell any in either, then you kind of have to go back to the drawing board. But ultimately, you're going to see which email gets more opens, which email gets more click-throughs, what's your conversion funnel. And then you say, okay, that works. Now I'm going to split test. So the meaning one did better than the discount one. Let's actually put a different picture in. And then it becomes a game. And the most successful entrepreneurs I know these days, especially who have digital presences, they spend all day on these split tests. It's like I go out to bars with them in New York, and all they talk about is their split tests. I'm like, oh God, I gotta go back to my desk and do my split test. But it's interesting. I mean, these people I know are making millions of dollars because they just sit there and optimize all day long.
Yeah. I want to pull that down to the most foundational level too, because not everyone, especially on this call, has audiences that they can go back and do elaborate split testing with. But everyone on the call has friends and family. And I'm not asking you to go sell or split test to your friends and family. But the thing about your friends and family is that they have friends and family. And what you need to do is really identify who the best people are among your friends and family for you to be selling to, and talk to them. Think of it as a focus group, even if it's one-on-one. You need to understand what resonates with them. What kind of language do they use? What kind of emails are they opening on a daily basis? What kind of websites are they visiting on a daily basis? Everything that Amanda just said about, you know, having an audience and being able to break it down in a way that teaches you something about how to market your business, you can actually apply to one-on-one conversations with the right kind of people as well.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I know that's something even in your business, the way it's run now, that's something that you do. I mean, you were nice enough to invite me up for a focus group at the Daily Worth office. So I know you're talking to people one-on-one as well.
Oh, yeah. One-on-one, we host focus groups. And it doesn't really look like, you know, it's not like we're necessarily videotaping it or you're behind a screen. It's not like we even script it out as well as we could. But you actually don't have to figure out your own marketing and brand positioning. I was schooled on this today by someone who's built, one of the most famous brands on earth in the music business. And he was saying to me, he's like, don't figure out your brand positioning. Ask your audience. They're going to tell you everything you need to know about what it is they want from you. And then you don't have to figure it out yourself. So listen, Tara, we actually only have about 2 minutes left. I want to go to that final question that we have. And then I'm just going to jump onto the Twitter stream and answer any more questions that anyone has. So the question is, what's your prediction for the economy in the near immediate future, let's say the next 25 years? What's one major prediction that you can make?
Well, for me, it's just that more and more people are going to be taking control over their own livelihoods. And that may not look like all of us starting our own businesses, although I think that that's a great option and certainly something that we should be looking at to solve the unemployment crisis in this country. But I think it may look like more people taking contractor positions with people that would have formerly been their employers. It may be more people becoming freelancers. It may be more people just jumping from project to project to project. But I saw a fantastic statistic in the U.S. Census from, it dates back to 2009, so I can only imagine the number is larger now, but $837 billion were generated on non-employer businesses in 2009. That's a pie that we can all get a piece of, and more importantly, it's a pie that we can all grow to much, much, much bigger proportions. And so, you know, no matter how small you think your business, no matter how small you think your contribution is to this new economy, it's growing, and you do have the opportunity to take agency over your own livelihood. You can be in control. Amanda, what's your prediction?
I just want to say, that's like the best news ever. especially both of us are moms, And it really helps to be able to have the flexibility and do things on your turn, on your own terms, and not have any limitations to your own earning potential.
Amen.
It's like, it's so exciting to wake out of, you know, get out of bed in the morning and be like, oh my God, how much money can I make today? Woohoo. that's at least how I operate. I don't know about you.
Oh, me too. Oh, completely.
My prediction is that this recession that we're in, everyone's getting a little apocalyptic right now. I think it's and actually this isn't my prediction. This is because I really do have two billionaires in my close personal network now because I'm so cool, and I do ask them a lot of questions because they're both self-made. And I said, so, you know, is America just doomed or is the economy coming back? And what they've both told me is that the economy is going to come back, but it's going to be like 5 to 10 years. And so it's just interesting to say that, we have about 5-10 years of extraordinary creativity. And if you want to do things totally unconventionally, now is the time. And you can just say, well, the economy made me do it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the perfect excuse to throw out convention. And give a reason for whatever your wildest dreams are in terms of how you want to structure your life and how you want to make money. Because things are going to come back. We live in an extraordinary country where there's constant innovation. Do we know where the economy is coming back from? No, we have no idea. Do we have any idea when the real estate market's going to hit the bottom? No, we have no idea. No one can predict that. So, but we do know it will eventually come back. It's just, it's just now is the time to innovate and be creative.
Amen. Well, Amanda, it's been a real pleasure.
Yes, always, my dear.
All right.
Thanks
well,
to everyone for tuning in this evening. I think we just named our next call that we're going to have to do, which is navigating the digital economy. I think you and I have a few things to say about that. So that's all I have to say. I'm going to be on Twitter. Please sign up for dailyworth.com to learn about your personal finances. And please say hi to me any way, shape, or form. And Tara, I'll turn it over to you to close out this call.
Fantastic. Well, I will be on Twitter answering questions as well. You can hop over to TaraGentile.com and sign up to get blog updates there, where I post about life and work in the U economy, or life and business and work in the U economy. And we will be sending out the recording in email tomorrow morning, so take a look at that. And we'll also send you invites directly to the Daily Worth and to my site as well, so that you can join in the conversation there as well. Guys, thank you so much. We had over 200 people on the call tonight, and I am so thankful for each and every one of you. Everyone, have a great night, and I'll see you in the new economy.
Blessings to all. Good night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference.